In this episode, find out who should be leading the sales process, sales or marketing departments, and how those roles have changed in the new age of technology.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery, brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Heyo! All right, all right. Look, in a moment, we're going to be entering the danger zone to talk about one of the toughest topics in marketing, whether sales or marketing teams should be leading your customer acquisition strategy. You know, it's interesting, 10 or 20 years ago, nobody was talking about that question, right? Because the answer was obvious. Your sales team is on the front lines, so they should be driving and leading the sales process. But so much has changed with the rise of the information age. You know, recently research suggested that most buyers are at least 70% through the buying process before they even talk to sales, which most people don't even take that into consideration. And only 19% of people actually want a salesperson to lead the buying process from the beginning to the end. Now the rest, well, they want to wait until they are ready to make a decision. And that means that most of the traditional sales process is happening without your sales team's involvement, getting attention, building demand for your solution, and introducing the product are all happening on a self-serve basis. So the companies that are going to excel going forward are the ones that are already going to have that mindset, and they're going to know who's supposed to lead when. Now, even salespeople agree that the process is changing, with 57% agreeing that the buyers are less dependent on sales during the buying process compared to just a few years ago. And as a result of these changes, many marketers and business experts are calling for a shift in the balance of power from sales teams to marketing teams. And, you know, it's important for you to understand that these marketing teams are now having a larger overall impact on revenue than the sales teams. But is that really the case? And if so, does that mean marketing should step into the driver's seat and start leading? Well, look, this is the topic of today's discussion on the podcast, and joining me right now to help me break it down and to make it digestible for you is Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg. Yo, yo, what is up?
Yo, Todd, what's up? Thanks for having me back.
Hey, you know what, Marcus? It's interesting. You know, first and foremost, let's discuss the change in the buying process and why business leaders even care about this topic. Like, I mean, naturally, it's something that comes up in almost every one of our client meetings, but let's start right there at the very top. Is there a change in the buying process? I know it's obvious to you, me, and to our diehard listeners, but let's break that down first.
Sure, yeah. I mean, how many conversations have we been in with a client where we have an old school CEO or marketer who's probably still using their Excel spreadsheets to manage their prospects?
Can I answer that question? Everyone.
All the time, right? And so oftentimes these people will say something like, well, my customers don't engage in business that way. My customers are still old school. My customers don't watch videos. My customers want to see super, super short content and they only want to read it, right? Like we're hearing all of these points of resistance to adapting to this new age of technology, and it's because of discomfort, right? There's some ego involved. There's some resistance to change that's happening here, but that doesn't change the way buyers are actually looking at the market, right? So from a sales leader perspective, we need to understand that it doesn't matter what we want to say. What matters is how the buyers want to hear it.
Because the market's fluid, right? I mean, that sales lead or that marketing lead, CEO or whoever, could be somewhat stagnant in their job. They could be mimicking what they've seen a mentor in their life do. But that's the sales team or the marketing team's approach. But the market of their customers is evolving at warp speed, and they may not be up to date with that.
Oh, yeah. And over the last 10 years, we've been seeing, well, 15 years, really, we've been seeing a really massive sea change in the way that buyers interact with brands. And it's started with the internet, right? And then in the mid 2000s, people started creating blog posts, and then blogging as a sales strategy took off. And then in the latter half of that decade, we saw the rise of social media and how that changed the way that buyers consume information online. And so now we've gotten to this point where the way that people make purchase decisions is, oh, you're saying that I don't have to trust the salesperson to tell me everything? Okay, well, in that case, I'm going to just go onto the internet and I'm going to get credible information from third-party sources. Or I don't want to talk to a salesperson and have them try to strong-arm me into a deal, right? We've had so many interactions over the course of our lives where we've been burned by sales and the asymmetry of power that sort of characterizes that relationship between buyers and salespeople. And so now we're resistant to even having that conversation in the first place. We're seeing that if you put your phone number and a chat box on your website, what are 9 out of 10 people going to click on? The chat box. If you have an opportunity to get a free demo that is on demand versus getting a free demo with a salesperson, what are most people 9 out of 10 times going to choose? To get the demo that they can watch by themselves at their convenience without having to worry about someone trying to strong arm them into a sale.
Hey, I think you explained that really well, but on a even larger level, this is the big trend of the internet in general. It is the internet is the world's greatest disruptor that we will probably ever see, because it's disrupting every industry and known way or established way of doing business.
Yes, and what's interesting is we often think that the internet conforms to what's happening in the real world, but what we're actually seeing is that the internet has changed the way people want to buy, and now that learning is being applied to point-of-sale businesses. Like, for example, create your own Froyo sundae.
What?
You can.
It's too early for that, but it sounds good.
Right. Like they have these shops that are popping up all over the place. I think they're called Sprinkles or something like that.
As a cupcake place.
But
I'm willing to look at that place too.
Yeah, that place too. But there's a Froyo place that I keep seeing where you just go in and you make your own sundae and then you weigh it. And then you pay and then you leave.
Oh, dude, everything's like that.
Right. You go to the supermarket.
There's like 1,000 of them in this city.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Have you just started noticing this? Because it's been out for like 5-6 years. Are you not a dessert person?
I love ice cream. I don't let myself have it.
Okay. Because it was like, I was like, yeah, hello. Like, we've all been doing this. By the way, while we're on this topic of Froyo, and I got to tell you this story because I think it's hysterical. I watched my father-in-law go into one of these frozen yogurt places, and you know how you put your cup underneath and you pull the lever down and then all of a sudden the swirl comes out and you kind of want to stack the whole thing? Well, my father-in-law pulls the lever and he's got his cup there and he looks at me and he goes, I think this thing's empty. But what he didn't have his thing underneath and it was piling up. He was piling up, missing his cup altogether, which I think is really funny. Until you're the one that has to clean that up all day, and then it's like dumb father-in-law.
There's
a sales metaphor, right?
My cup's not
but
being filled.
Generally, people, I don't know if the internet changed the way people want to buy. I think people never wanted to interact with salespeople, but they had to do it because there wasn't another option. Now that they don't have to talk to a salesperson, they want to be a smart consumer, and Google made it accessible every time they get on to search for them to bypass the need to go to a salesperson.
Absolutely. And we've, as competition in basically every industry has gone 5x over the last 15 years, it's the brands that are creating the content that explain their product or service
right.
that are rising to the top.
Absolutely.
And the people who, the businesses that have been around for a long time, they have established sales processes and they're not adapting. They're used to having that asymmetry of information where their prospects need to call and talk to a salesperson. I mean, how often do we have conversations with clients where they don't want to discuss their pricing,
right.
they don't want to put up product demos, they don't want to talk about their features or benefits, they just think, oh, well, my website's going to be a brochure.
Okay, but in the interest of full disclosure, we had a lot of those same concepts for our own business when we got started. True or false?
True.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
But what did we discover? We discovered that You'll generate more revenue. You'll close more deals if you handle or tackle the difficult questions in content, because now people don't feel repelled and they don't go somewhere else.
Right. And there's this moment when someone's on your website and they have a specific question, like, how much is this going to cost? That's the number one most important question that buyers say they want to get out of a sales call or from your website. It's the number one most asked for thing. And yet most websites don't address pricing, right? And they don't want to. The salesperson wants to control that conversation. And we've had many conversations here on the podcast about how you use video to still control that conversation. Right. But the point I'm trying to get at is, when you don't provide the answers to those specific questions, or it's too hard to find those answers on your website, the reaction that your prospects are going to have is frustration.
And deception.
They're going to feel like you're withholding something. Yeah. They're not going to trust you. So they're going to be frustrated. You've just lost their trust because they know you know your price. They know you know the answer to the question that they're thinking in their head. And if you don't tell them what that answer is, you're hiding something from them.
All right. So let's take this one step further. Look, you know, I've been married for 17 years. I've never been on a dating site. But isn't that the same reaction that online daters get when they're looking at somebody else's photos and the photos are too close up, like it's the side of a girl's lip, or, you know, like, you know, they're not showing things for a reason, and you just end up going somewhere else. And buyers of products and services online have the same reaction that you would from dating photos that aren't revealing enough.
Totally agreed. Here's another example that basically everyone who's listening is going to resonate with. When your significant other gets a text message and then they noticeably hide their phone from you, you know they're being deceptive. You've already lost trust for them in that moment with that knee-jerk reaction where they shielded their screen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it was.
Right.
It could have just been a funny joke, but right. The body language made you lose trust. The same type of behavior happens on your website. If people think you're withholding information that you clearly know the answer to, then buyers are not going to put up with that crap.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, you know, one of the questions that we want to address right away is, why should business leaders even care about this topic? You know, sales teams are used to controlling the flow and the delivery of information. Marcus and I were just talking about that. I want to do a little summary for you. And modern buyers, look, we aren't having it. You know, we want to be in charge. We want to understand. And if you're going to survive in the sea change of how people make buying decisions, then you're going to need to adapt and realign with buyer expectations. And the faster you do it, the faster you seize larger opportunities for revenue growth.
Right. And what's really interesting about this, and I know we sort of teased at this topic that we're finally getting to today in our video marketing trends piece. The very first trend that we identified was that modern websites are going to create a self-service sales experience. And that means taking that, you know, the sales process has now been front-loaded to the marketing team,
right?
People are, on average, 70%. This is like five consulting firms have all validated the 70% metric. So it's something that the industry has now accepted is true. So if buyers are 70% of the way through the process, they're getting that information from somewhere. Is it on your website? Is it from third-party sources? Is it on social? How are they getting that information, and are you controlling that conversation and leading them?
Yep. It's even, you know, when you say, Marcus, that you know, 70% of that buyer experience and that journey is going to take place online, a lot of people intuitively are saying, yeah, well, that's great, fellas. Doesn't work for my business, right? But if you look at it that way, that doesn't mean that your target customer looks at it that way too.
Well, here's the thing. People are people.
Right.
Right. And I don't care how special of a snowflake your target customers are.
Right.
They are still fundamentally people, and they have the same fundamental psychological triggers.
Right.
The thought process people go through on the path to purchase is the same regardless of the product.
Right.
Right. There's just maybe more complexity to certain sales than others, and so getting them through that thought process is more challenging, might take more steps. But it's still the same basic thought sequence. And so because that's how people always buy, first you get their attention with some promise of value, right? The headline or the ad. Mm-hmm. Then you get them interested and engaged and learning about your solution and how it can solve their problems, interest. Then you have, you need to make that interest something that is now a priority for them to solve, desire. And then you need to get them to take action, right? And usually that action step involves overcoming any lingering resistance.
Absolutely.
And what we've always said here and held on the podcast and in Marketing Collateral for the Wirebuzz team, if you are going to convert leads at a high rate, you have to systematically address every unresolved objection and every unanswered question, because that creates resistance to the sale.
And the salesperson has to be nimble enough when they're having one-on-one interactions to identify where that prospect is stalling out, having resistance, using a common objection or a misunderstanding. And that salesperson needs to be nimble enough to address it in a conversation, in person or over the phone, and then also reinforce it with a piece of supportive content that lives on your website after they have that phone call or that meeting in person. You buy all that?
Yes. Now, to take that even one step further and tie it back to the self-service experience,
okay,
many of those questions are going to become barriers to entry, right? People will not speak with your salesperson because of that question or objection.
Can you give me an example?
I don't know how much this is going to cost, so I'm going to go look at another business instead.
We had one this morning.
Yeah.
Right? Where he was like, all right, so you know, I know you guys are great at what you do, but what's the cost?
Exactly.
Right?
Okay. I need to get a sense of the price so that I know if I should even keep talking to you. That's why price is the number one thing people are looking for. Can I even afford this? And if I can't, then I'm going to go somewhere else because I'm wasting my time here.
It's a big part of the bounce rate on a website, mm-hmm, too, is when somebody's shopping and they are shopping, if they're not talking with your salesperson, they're still in the shopping process. But high bounce rates on product or service pages are also an indicator that they're not finding the quick access to the dollar or range, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once you start providing that information and you do it in a candid way, and everybody knows how to explain pricing. You know, for us, it's really difficult. I'm sure if you're listening, it's probably difficult for your business to explain pricing because in most cases, people aren't selling a simple product service that's got a grande, vente, or tall size pricing. And so like for us, it's the most popular question we're asked, and it is the most difficult question to answer. But once your team understands how to answer it properly in content, in text, or in a video on your site, now you're starting to move people through who would have stalled out, gone, looked at another site, and found information from a competitor that's willing to address that difficult question.
Yes. Now, to take that comment even one step further.
Yeah, this is
even
funny.
One step further, right?
Do you know how many times you followed up with the one step?
I know, it's so true because I got to close the loop
on this, right?
So the number one reason why people don't want to address price is because they want to control that conversation and build up their value before revealing it.
I see.
Right? And so salespeople, they would rather control that conversation and repel people,
yep,
in many cases than screen out what we will call bad fits. I think that is a critical element of revealing something like pricing and information that you might think will push some people away. But let's be realistic for a second. Those people are going to find that information, that reason not to work with you in the first place. The problems with your business, right? We just talked a couple weeks ago about Samsung and how they are directly addressing the problems with their business.
Absolutely.
So if you're not addressing those problems with your business, if you're not addressing things like price, then a lot of the people who end up wasting your salespeople time are going to be bad fits because you didn't give them the information that they needed to screen themselves out of your sales process either, right? So by revealing this information, you're not only going to capture more relevant prospects, but you're going to push away the time wasters who just eat up your salesperson's time. And so I just wanted to make sure that that part was clear too, that you, yes, you are attracting more of the, you know, right prospects, but then you're pushing away the bad ones.
It's a super point, worthy enough of a, and let's take this one step further. I mean, it was a good point. And that's where marketing teams need to step up, and you need to create content that replicates the sales process, but in an on-demand fashion. And effective modern websites are organized such that buyers can find the answers to any of their questions on their website. And if you're not there yet with your business, you're not providing that information, then your marketing team needs to start working towards that objective. Now, while Marcus and I are talking, what I think is the big central premise out of this conversation is companies that have siloed marketing and sales teams are tomorrow's blockbusters. I mean, in the sense that I could use Kodak or Polaroid or any of these companies that used to be gold standards in their industry. If your marketing and your sales team are not meshed in together, hand and glove, really rowing in the same direction, you got big ass problems with your business. And it's very common for us when we're brought to the table by a marketing team for them to say, this is what we need, guys, blah, blah, blah. And we will say, when we do the needs analysis, a strategy review, we'd love to have your head of sales there. And they go, I don't know. And they start shaking their head left to right. Like, the salespeople, they don't get it. Start aligning those two teams. You'll get amazing results. The places that we get the best results are when the CEO reaches out and is like, guys, we need you to come in and streamline this process, work on the video assets that fit into the sales process to support the funnel, and then teach both teams how to use this information so we can move the needle at faster rates.
Yeah.
But that's because it's blessed from the most high in the company.
Or when someone has like a chief acquisition officer or one of those sort of modern monikers for, hey, I'm just in charge of making us grow.
Right.
And the people who report to me are VPs of sales and marketing.
And Marcus, that's why for me, the most rewarding projects we ever get to work on are those situations, or if it's a small startup that has enormous potential and we can help align that from day one.
Yes. Now, a couple things here. The first is that the buying process should build momentum. Right? It should feel seamless from beginning to end. If your marketing and your sales teams are not perfectly aligned in terms of how your content is being executed, created, and promoted, and then deployed on your website, and that does not align with how salespeople who are actually closing these deals at the end of the process are doing business, then you don't have a website, a marketing channel that is seamlessly leading people down the path to purchase.
Yep.
And so one of the things that we often talk about is, okay, let's take a big step back. What is the linear path that we need to take people through from the very first touch with your marketing team to the handoff with the sales team? And then from the sales team on, what are the systems and processes and content your sales team needs to get even more success? And so there are all different sorts of situations here where you would need to set this up a little bit different. But the primary thing to take away from this entire discussion is that your marketing and your sales team, regardless of the type of business that you have, they at least need to be aligned. Even if you aren't going to shift the control from sales to marketing, sales needs to understand that marketing is going to have a bigger impact on their own success, both as an individual rep as well as an organization. And that means communicating, having those open lines of communication. Sometimes it's something as simple as BCCing the marketing team when you reply to a common question. Now your marketing team suddenly has some insight. Oh, this is a common question. We need to create some content that addresses this on our website. And it's almost no extra work. You just BCC someone on your marketing team.
Keep them in the loop. All right, so let's take this one step further. Just kidding. Just screwing with you. Marketing teams are now responsible for 70% of the sales process, which means they need to create content that serves many of the functions traditionally held by salespeople. Now, does that mean, Marcus, that they should be in charge of setting the agenda and allocating the budgets? Is that what we mean?
Yeah, I actually think that I mean, as I mentioned a moment ago, the most important thing is alignment, but I do think that there are situations where marketing teams should be in charge, and there are situations when sales teams should be in charge. A couple weeks ago, we talked about, maybe a few weeks ago, it was inbound versus account-based marketing.
Yep.
And
a really good episode, by the way.
Yeah, it was really interesting, and it comes up all the time, just understanding the fundamental strategy that your business is trying to execute. Now, if you are in an ABM model, right? So you have
account-based marketing.
Account-based, right? So you have specific target prospects. You know who they are, and it's a priority that you close each of them. So you're going to work all of them. This is not inbound. You're not playing the numbers. You're going out. You're remarkable, and you're trying to close these people. In that situation, sales is leading the entire conversation from the beginning of that buyer journey all the way to the end. In that context, sales should continue to drive everything. However, the sales leadership needs to understand the value and the role of content and how to inject that content both into the sales process as well as updating their website. Because here's the thing, like, how many conversations do we have with a client where we know that they have a question that they didn't ask us?
Mm-hmm.
We find out that they had it when they went and searched our website.
Right.
Happens all the time. They're not always going to tell you what their point of, you know, what their objection is or what their question is. So you have to put that content out where they can find it without needing to ask you, right? And so in an ABM model, sales leads, but they have to collaborate with their marketing team because the marketing team is going to create the assets that drive that process forward.
Mm-hmm.
Partnership. Now in inbound,
Inbound's almost the opposite.
It's almost exactly the opposite because here the marketing team is optimizing the pipeline for the salesperson.
Yep.
They're trying to spit out higher quality leads in greater volume. That means that the salesperson simply lining them up and knocking them down in an ideal process, right? HubSpot's a good example of actually executing this strategy because they go really broad and then they create personas that sort of narrow people down into different paths, and then they offer products. And at some point, once your lead score has gotten high enough, a salesperson will reach out just to close the deal.
Let me get this straight. You're actually saying on this very podcast that HubSpot, which are the pioneers of inbound marketing, are good at inbound marketing?
I know, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
But they also have an extremely complex sale. High ticket price, right? Large addressable audience with a very, very fractured persona base, right? Lots of different buyers.
Totally.
And they need to communicate to each of them as though they were, priorities, right? Like, I'm going to serve you relevant content. It's going to be different than someone else. So when you're creating an inbound organization, you need your marketing team to do so much more of the work that you're going to need to make that part of your budget the lion's share, because the amount of content you're going to have to create is immense. The amount of segmentation, the amount of strategy work that goes in to creating an effective inbound funnel is going to be immense. Now, the ROI is crazy when you do inbound because an investment today reaps permanent ROI into the future, right? You create a piece of content, it drives leads for forever. One-time investment, permanent outcome. So the ROI in inbound is amazing, but the challenge is that if you're putting all of your budget into attracting more salespeople, you're never going to make that switch to inbound. In order to do that, you fundamentally have to shift the priority from sales to your marketing team. However, the caveat I want to make here is that even if your marketing team is leading, your marketing leader's best buddy needs to be the sales leader.
Absolutely. All right, so one of the easiest ways for me to determine if a company should be following an account-based model, ABM or inbound model, is the number of target prospects that they're going after, right?
Yep.
Do you want to just spend a moment explaining it? I think I've heard you explain it a couple of times, but I think it's a really easy way for people to get their head around it.
Yeah, sure. So if you have a small addressable audience, then usually high ticket enterprise level, you're just big ticket sales, then what you're going to be doing is your salesperson is going to be building a relationship with each prospect. You're going to walk them through the process step by step. You're going to tailor and personalize every aspect of that buying process in order to maximize their attention and get them to align with your salesperson.
That may be, there may be 1,000 prospects in the country or 10,000 medical oncologists across the world, but you know that population and you know that it's a finite number.
Right. So like targeting doctors would be a good example that we deal with all the time. Targeting Fortune 500 companies that use SAP software.
Right.
Like these are examples of businesses that we've worked with that have very, very small addressable audiences, but when they close those deals, it has a huge impact on their business.
Yep.
So it's worth it for that sales organization to spend more time working each lead, whereas on the inbound side, you realize that you're going to burn a lot of leads, but you're generating good quality ones at very low cost, so you're okay with that. So if you can afford to burn leads, inbound's great. If you can't, that's ABM.
Yep. All right. Perfect. I'm so glad you did this. So now let me do this kind of a recap on ABM and where it fits in and who should lead. So with ABM, the sales team continues to lead the process and drives the editorial agenda. All right. And that's because your sales team is running the running the ball throughout the entire buying process. Marketing's role is to provide self-service information and sales enablement content designed to make selling easier, right, for the sales team. Now, on the inbound model, the inbound organizations, it's definitely more complicated. Think of it like a partnership where marketing drives most of the strategy while salespeople are buyer's advocates, all right? Because your salespeople are still out on the front lines, they possess key insights that need to be communicated with the marketing team to solve upstream productivity challenges. All right.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I think it might help to explain sort of how we do it here at Wirebuzz because we sort of fit into almost that nexus point between these two businesses.
And when you say that, what you're really talking about is our own strategy for generating leads fits into almost both of these buckets.
Right. Because, we have a very boutique style consulting practice, right? So we're working with people to create custom tailored solutions for their business. And yet we're also using inbound for lead generation, lead nurturing. And, you know, obviously video is something that people have to be in the right frame of mind to prioritize, right? So there's an inbound component, but then once the inbound component sort of we depart from that and we've surfaced a sales qualified lead, well, now we're providing that super personalized hands-on ABM type service. Mm-hmm. So that puts me as the person who's sort of setting the agenda for the Wirebuzz editorial calendar in a little bit of a difficult situation. And I think it might help the listeners to understand how we align on editorial calendar for the different objectives. So what we do is we collaborate. We're partners, the marketing side of our business with the sales side. And so what I'll typically do is I'll schedule some time to meet with various team members who are on have different types of touch points with clients.
They're out on the front lines, but in different ways.
Right. So I'll have conversations with our video editors. I'll find out, okay, what are the types of challenges that you're experiencing that I can solve by better educating our prospects, right? That's an important thing for just speeding up our workflow, right? Making our team more efficient. Then I'll have conversations with our project managers. What are the challenges that you're experiencing? Are customers getting value out of their videos? Are they using them right? If they're not, what are the reasons why they're not, right? Let's solve those challenges. Make sure that you're able to really provide success and wins for clients throughout the customer life cycle. And then if I'm talking to our sales team, obviously I'm asking questions like, what's causing resistance in the sale now? What are the questions that you're getting? And then that allows us to create a big list of topics. We try to do this quarterly or semi-annually. And then we have a collaboration meeting where we all sync up, we get on the same page, and we say, okay, which one of these topics is most important? Let's knock that one out first. Let's do it the right way the first time.
Right.
Move on to the second one. And we just systematically progress through content.
Off of a prioritized list, right?
Based on perceived impact, right?
Well, I always think that, I think that's a really smart way. In fact, I noticed that we present to new clients their video needs in the same manner, in a prioritized flow. Do this, then this, then this. And if there's time available, let's knock these down.
I'm basically, when I do this process for Wirebuzz and set up editorial calendar, is basically the same questions that we ask prospects.
Yeah.
It's the same process.
But you already know the answer.
I usually know what I think. I have my hand on, my thumb on the pulse of sort of what's going on with Wirebuzz, but you'd be surprised. It's very easy to guess and think that you know what the important topics are. But then sometimes when you have a conversation with, you know, for example, a sales rep who's having these conversations all the time with prospects, and you surface a question or a need that you would never even think of.
Absolutely.
Happens all the time.
Yep. Okay, so when it comes to setting the agenda, it sounds like ABM organizations should continue to let sales lead while inbound organizations need to adopt more of a partnership. But what about budgets, Marcus?
Yeah, so traditionally...
Who owns that budget? That's what everybody wants to know, right?
Everybody wants to know
I've actually been in meetings where like the sales guy is telling me, the head of sales is saying, dude, we absolutely need that. Like, that's going to help me close deals at faster rates, but she has all the money, right? So he'll like pull me aside and go, if you can help me convince her, now we're in business. Christo, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I mean, as a project manager here, we've also run into cases with clients where they're like, well, you know, we want to do this project. We want to create these videos. I don't have the marketing budget for it, but I'm going to pull from the sales budget and we'll kind of, you know, piggyback both budgets to get it done. So, you know, a lot of the times it is kind of like that team effort when it comes to the budget and getting the projects.
It's completed. A really good point. Those budgets are really designed for the same purpose, right? Which is to close deals at faster rates, right? To convince and convert.
Absolutely.
And it's quite common for marketing to squeeze into sales' budget and the vice versa to happen. But ultimately, if they aren't aligned, it's going to cost significantly more. So Marcus, who controls the budgets? How do you answer that question?
So when it comes to budgets, if 70% of the buying process is happening through content, then at least for a while, you should probably shift your budget to creating content. And the reason I say that is you're going to generate more leads at higher rates, and they're going to be of greater quality. Your sales reps are going to then be able to use that content to drive people through the sales process at faster rates. So at least in the beginning, at least to get the 90% viable solution on your website, you should absolutely shift your priority over to making sure that the self-serve experience is optimized for people. At that point, it's okay, maybe you're squeezing out little efficiencies on the marketing side, right? Especially in an ABM model where you're not trying to drive a whole bunch of leads into the system using ads and such. Then you might just shift back over to optimizing and improving your sales force, right? So it's a little bit different based on the environment, but generally speaking, I'm saying marketing teams need more budget because marketing teams are now having a greater impact on the sales process. Salespeople are expensive. Salespeople's time is expensive. It takes on average 10 to 11 months to start revealing, seeing month-to-month ROI from a salesperson. So you're taking a huge 10-month loss before that new hire actually starts bearing fruit.
It's a huge investment.
Right? It's a huge, I mean, we know we're running a business here.
We're in the process of training two salespeople. And it's, even though our deals close at faster rates, you know, and maybe it takes 3 months or, you know, 3 weeks, or maybe it takes 3 months, it's hard for a business owner to not go, is this even working? Mm-hmm. And how do I know if it's working, right? I can tell you that are the people that we're training right now for sales, last week, they closed a couple deals. Mm-hmm. And we're really new with them. We're like still within, 45 days or something, mm-hmm. right? That's promising.
Right. And so content helps you get new sales reps activated faster because they don't have to have all of those conversations as a performance, right? So there's different types of selling. Some selling is a performance. Webinars are a performance. Creating a video sales letter and you're the talent, that's a performance.
Right.
But if someone is creating the video for you and it's going to be professionally produced, then you don't have to worry about the performance because that's taken care of. And now suddenly your salesperson doesn't have to answer the question perfectly because they have the perfect answer to the question on a video.
Right. So they can study it, they can answer it, they can send it out. And the more often that question comes up, the more the answer gets into long-term memory and becomes second nature.
Right. And when you put that content out on your website where your prospects can find it, your sales reps are going to be answering that question a lot less frequently because a lot of people are going to come into that conversation with the answer already.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about content for a moment. Are you cool if I bounce down into the content part?
Sure thing.
I know that, you know, we've been discussing building blocks today and really a if this, then that, right? If ABM, then do this. If inbound, do that. But let's talk about content for a moment. You and I both know that not just any content will do, right? I mean, it takes something specific.
Right.
And you need to create content, the right content, in order to get the right results. So tell the listeners what kind of content they should be prioritizing and whether it should be video or not, and really the big question, why?
Yep. So generally speaking, marketers get very focused on search and social. And unfortunately, in many markets, search and social are not either going to be fast enough at generating ROI, or they're going to have very low ROI. Social media, for example, usually has very low ROI until you have a very large audience.
Yes.
SEO, even if you create a really bomb blog post today, it could take 6 to 9 months before it hits the first page of Google.
Right.
When you start seeing traffic. And in some markets, and I know we have lots of clients who come to us and they're like, oh, we want to increase our search rankings. And it's like, you don't have any good keywords. There are no good keywords that are close to the sale for you.
Right.
That's a bad strategy for your business.
Right.
You're hearing the tactics and the tactics sound sexy, but it's not the right one right. for your business. So in many cases, marketers are operating in what I would call la-la land, mm-hmm. where they are thinking, oh, I'm going to create this 5 quick ways to XYZ, and I'm gonna put that on our blog, and then people are going to love it, and they're going to share it, and I'm going to put it on social, and everyone's going to be engaged.
Yeah.
And it doesn't happen. And then all of these marketing organizations are like, well, I'm not seeing content marketing ROI. Screw that. And so salespeople oftentimes have a bad taste in their mouth from a content initiative they've seen tried and failed because it was the wrong content. It was content designed to get the attention of prospects, maybe. But then there was no clear path to purchase from that content. That's why we always tell our clients, we start close to the point of sale, the topics that are closest to your sales process, and then you expand backwards. By doing that, you're creating a path to purchase. You're also prioritizing assets that your sales team can actually use. And then you're creating content because it's closer to the sale, closer to the zero moment of truth. The leads that you do generate from that content are going to be further along in your buying process. So when we're talking about what content to start with for your content initiatives, we're not talking about driving a ton of traffic and leads. We're talking about making your sales process more efficient top to bottom.
And I visually see that as taking a plunger to the bottom end of your funnel and pulling out the leads that are stuck somewhere below, starting with that decision stage content. Taking people that have stalled out and pulling them through.
Right, because if you create an optimization at the top of the funnel, but you don't have the content at the bottom, you're generating traffic, you might be generating leads, but right. you have no mechanism to translate those leads into qualified leads that your sales team actually wants to work. So what's the number one criticism salespeople have? Their marketing team.
Yeah.
The leads suck.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And so we start at the bottom, because that's what your sales team's going to value. So now your marketing and your sales teams are better aligned. You're going to your salesperson saying, what are the questions you're getting? What are the objections? Okay, I'm going to create some content that solves your problem. Think about how that changes the nature of your relationship. And then on top of that, you have all of those other advantages we just talked about in terms of increasing the efficiency of your sales process, generating higher quality leads, creating a clear path to purchase. And then once you hit that top of the funnel, obviously we're talking inbound here because in right. ABM there is no top of funnel
right.
in that sense. But when we're talking to inbound people, that's when you start creating that hero content, the go big stuff, the major YouTube campaigns, the Facebook ads, the YouTube ads, all of these things you can do to drive leads at scale. You have access to those once you've refined your sales process and you've given a clear path to purchase.
So selecting and prioritizing videos is something that, you know, we end up doing every single day here when we're creating strategies for clients. There are certain topics that always work. And then there are topics that are that vary based on your product and your business. Now, according to research, buyers are most interested in the following information. There are five things you might want to write them down, unless, of course, you're driving. And then I would recommend you pull out your cell phone and you text it to yourself.
I use Evernote, and then I capture audio recordings while I'm in the car.
You do that?
Oh, I do it every single day.
It's much better than texting yourself. So the first thing I want you to do is, what buyers are most interested in, okay? And so this is the information you should be getting your head around. Number one is pricing information. God forbid people know how much things cost, right? And in most businesses, mine included, it's not so easy. I generally start that question with, well, it depends.
We've been working for 5 or 6 weeks now. Like, it's a hard thing to outline and deliver correctly.
Yeah.
But it's priority number one on our list is how can we effectively communicate how we do pricing and provide transparency around that.
And it's also number one in the research results. So pricing is number one. Number two is product information and features, which you could always boil it down to how does it work? That's the second most important or most interested type of information from prospective buyers. The third is product fit. Will the product meet your business's specific goals? Then case studies. How has your solution helped other businesses that are similar to mine? And the fifth and final one are benefits. Why should your organization make this purchase?
And then I would say, I mean, that's what buyers say that they value. But what I would add to that list as you're creating your prioritizations, and this comes up in all the time, and I'm sure feels like every episode, the common questions and objections. Make sure that if you're not addressing those in the context of those other five types of assets, that you create standalone content that addresses those questions or objections, and that those are easy to find on your website.
In an ideal world, you're going to want, as Marcus mentioned, to handle those common objections or misunderstandings or pushbacks earlier on in the process, so that person has already resolved it and they flow faster through the decision stage. But if they're common, create individual pieces of content to reinforce what might have been brought up earlier.
And this is a concept called yes ladders. It's a sales technique that I know when I was selling insurance, my target was 50 yeses before the close. I needed them to say yes at least 50 times audibly. And every time someone says no or raises an objection or asks you a question during the sales process, you are training them to say no. You want to train them to be aligned with you, to follow you and to nod and to lean in.
Right.
And that means that you address the objection at the moment that it is likeliest to arise. Usually that's going to be in the context of other content. So, for example, if we're doing an explainer video and we know that there's going to be ROI questions or price resistance, then we make sure that as soon as we address pricing in the video, that we then handle the objection or we front load the objection handle before we've introduced pricing. By doing that, you keep people aligned with you. As much as you can have your target customers on the same page, the easier it will be to guide them.
Yep.
But the moment that they start pushing back and questioning and creating this resistance,
which are like speed bumps.
Yeah, it's adversarial. The relationship between sales and the prospect becomes adversarial because now you're on your heels as a salesperson and they're attacking, trying to fish out how you're being deceptive, right? And they're always going to assume if that there's malice. I mean, we try always, not to, but they're always going to assume malice. So as a salesperson, right, you have to make sure that you're addressing all of those things as they come up so that you can position yourself as a trusted consultant and guide.
And part of that lesson here, which should be important for marketing and sales teams, is when you get out of a meeting with a prospect, we always do a debrief, right? Like a postmortem of that meeting. And we had one just the other day where after the client left, we all huddled up in the conference room to figure out what we could learn from that experience. How could we do it better the next time? And what came up was it was too adversarial, which meant not that the client was confrontational. It actually meant that we didn't do a good job setting up the education. So when they got to that point, it felt adversarial to them because we didn't walk them properly through the process.
We didn't, you start by aligning with them and then you present.
Yeah.
Right? That way what you're presenting jives with their goals. And by doing that, you're sort of steering in the same direction. Now, I wanted to circle back to one of your other questions. You were asking what
you
topics.
I think what you're saying is you want to take this one step further?
No, I want to circle back. You know, it's so funny. When you are speaker trained, there are certain transition mm-hmm. statements that you memorize and that you incorporate so that, like I did impromptu speaking in college, and you have 1 minute to prepare a 6-minute speech. So all of the transitional language, you just memorize the transitional language and you fill in the gaps. And so now I catch myself all the time resorting back to those memorized lines.
And Marcus, we did the same thing. We were training radio. So an easy segue all the time is, well, in the meantime and in between time, let's go to, you know, it's like you've got all these like stupid sayings that mean nothing but help you flow into the next topic.
And they're yours.
And they're yours, right?
Yeah. All right. So at the top of this, before we got into the specific types of topics that you should be addressing in your content, you also asked, and should it be video? And the answer to that question is, if you can afford video 100% for all of these topics. And the reason is super obvious. Think about your very favorite website experiences. You go to the website, are you encountering large walls of text? Or are you getting all of the information, deep information, exactly what you need to learn, with only just a couple of lines of text and a video that goes into greater depth?
Yeah.
That's the ideal website user experience for just about every person. I need to know the gist at a snap, in a snapshot. So yes, give me the headline and the subhead. But then for me to dive deeper and get past just the chief benefit takeaway of that video, if I want to get more depth, if I'm an analytical buyer, or if that's the feature or benefit that's relevant to me, I want to really understand it. But you're not going to get me to read 800 words on that page in that little, horizontal box that's in the middle of your website. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
But you could get me to watch a 2.5-3 minute video, roughly 800 words. And now I am that much better educated and I've actually consumed that information and your website still looks pretty.
Right. Absolutely. But I need an aha moment. Like I need a light bulb to go off. When I'm looking at a product or service overview video, I want it to address that pain point that I've been struggling with, and I want myself to actually feel the good life again of what life is like when I've solved that problem, I've now streamlined it, and I'm moving forward. So, video is a really important tool. We have naturally prioritized it for us as a business and a podcast, but what we like about it is that it just closes deals at faster rates. It converts people in freakish rates, and it changes the trajectory of businesses, not just our clients, but also ours. And so you should be thinking about how do you always do more in less time, and 9 times out of 10, video is the answer.
Yep, and when you do this right, you should be able to give a list of questions, your most common questions, the things that people look for on your website. You should be able to give that to someone who's never seen your website before. And you should say, can you find the answers to these questions? And have them navigate your website and record their screen, right? So just question one, try to find it. See how hard it is for them to find the answers to these questions, and then consider optimizing your website's user experience based on where people intuitively want to go. You put a video under video resources under your resources tab, but then your prospects are going to the How It Works page and they're looking for a specific question.
That makes me want to scream.
Right. And so why would you, you're putting the video in a place that seems like it makes sense for you, that might make it easier for you to organize your website right. for you.
But not in line with a buyer's path.
Right. And so you put the content where buyers are actually looking for that content
yep.
in that proper context. Now, we're it's the pixel age, right? Your pages can be as long as you want, as long as they're properly sequenced, and that's where people are looking. So as you're going about creating this nuts and bolts content, the stuff that you have to have that to replicate that first 70% of the sales process, that should all be on video, and it should all be easy to find on your website. And once you do that, the role of your sales team shifts a little bit, right? Because now instead of teaching your prospects from the beginning, you're picking up the conversation where they've left off on their own journey. And there are all sorts of wonderful tools like HubSpot and Marketo now, where you can see specifically which content they've already consumed and which ones they haven't.
Right.
And then using that intelligence, your salesperson, instead of spending 45 minutes explaining the basics,
right.
something anyone could do, you could train a monkey to do, now you're using all of that time to align with the prospect,
yep.
to build rapport, and to personalize your product to their needs.
And when this is done right, the marketing team educates the prospect and delivers the nuts and bolts information, which enables your sales team to step in to a trusted consultative role and personalize that sales experience for each customer. And, you know, once you have those bare necessities taken care of, and when I'm talking about bare necessities, I'm talking about the buyer's journey supported by video and the right type of text like Marcus was talking about, then it's more like the process that we described here at Wirebuzz about how we use video and how we take people through the buyer's journey. Talk to the members of your team who are on the front lines. You need to be looking for, what are the reasons why people don't buy? Is it competition? Is it price? Could it be a variety of other reasons? Maybe there are objections, and you're going to want to handle those objections. What are the questions that cause prospects to stall out inside of your sales funnel? Answer those questions on your website. And what are those topics they care about that dovetail into your solution? You need to know what those are. You need to build really smart, concise content around it. Those are the topics that you can use to drive traffic and generate leads.
I just want to pick up where you just left off right there with, you know, the topics that dovetail into your product.
Yeah.
Because that's one of those things that when we're talking with people, like, they know what the challenges are. They know what the raw data they need to deliver to the prospect is. But what they struggle with is applying that to a content piece.
Yeah.
Right? And so what we're looking at are opportunities to be helpful or entertaining where we can, in context, establish demand, right? So you have this optimized sales funnel that we just talked about, and now when you're circling back to expand the top of the funnel, drive traffic leads, create that content for social media and search, you're not, like, as an example, let's use Wirebuzz as an example. Wirebuzz wants to talk about explainer videos or testimonial videos, as an example. But we're not going to attract a ton of website visitors or a lot of interest by creating a page on our blog or a podcast episode.
And we already know that because of search demand.
Right. There's very little search demand for testimonial videos.
And a few people show up to us and they're like, hey guys, we need an explainer video. Instead,
right.
they're like, we're not selling, or people don't understand our business, or how do we track leads, attention span? Like that's their entry.
Yep, absolutely. And so they have something that they want and that they think is their problem. They're looking for solutions to those known variables, those known problems. Now you have a specific solution that solves those problems, but they don't know that they need your specific solution yet. So there's a gap. That's what we call demand gen content, the content that bridges the gap between what your customers want to hear and what your product can actually help them with. So in the case of explainer videos, for example, Wirebuzz might want to talk about how to increase lead generation on your website, right? That's a much, much, much more popular search topic. It's a topic that people are more likely to share. And one of the things that we could include in that is adding an explainer video to your homepage increases conversion rates between 20 and 80% on average. And that's a permanent increase with a one-time investment. So right. now we have introduced a piece of content that they're already looking for. And then in that content, we've shown them a new problem, a new deficiency, or a new opportunity. And that dovetails into what we want to talk about, right? That's how we create that top of funnel and continue that linear path to the purchase.
Yeah, it's super cool. Super nerdy, but once you get your head around it, it all starts to make sense. And, you know, it's not easy for businesses to determine what topics are going to be profitable for their business and where they should prioritize and focus their attention. So what we did for the listeners of this podcast is we created a free topic selection worksheet that you can get access to. It's a download. It's free to you. It's accessible at wirebuzz.com/topics. That's wirebuzz.com/topics. And, you know, Marcus, I think it's a really interesting conversation. Marketing or sales, who should lead? Quick answer is, hey, it depends.
Partnership always.
Right.
In an ABM model, sales continues to lead. In an inbound model, you're definitely going to need to shift budget and resources from sales to marketing because that will make your marketing team that much more efficient. Investing in sales does not improve your marketing. Investing in marketing does improve your sales.
Right.
In an inbound model, you need to understand that putting a dollar into marketing is like putting a dollar into marketing and sales.
You know, I think it's important you bring that up, especially when we think about Wirebuzz and the conversation that we had, because we're kind of a blend of both. And I think it takes the right type of strategist to be able to look at your long-term goals, understand your business and who your target customers are, so you can be prioritized down the right path. That's tricky.
Yeah, well, in our case, we're looking at expanding the top of the funnel with search traffic and social traffic. But then we also have a very complex sales process because it's all personalized. So there's a ton of things we need to address later in the funnel. But then there's also all of these topics that we should be addressing at the top of the funnel.
Right.
And so balancing, okay, where does our marketing team spend our time? Do we spend our time driving traffic or do we spend our time knocking deals down?
Right.
And what we've discovered is that there's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
And that the fastest growth has come from optimizing the bottom of the funnel, especially some of those topics that sort of have that they offer the 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
They drive traffic, but they're also really valuable. So for example, that for us, that would be like video hosting. It's a super commonly searched term,
right?
But it also indicates that people are just now looking to invest in video. And so we're attracting a significant number of searchers by teaching about video hosting.
Right.
But we're also attracting them later in the buying journey. So it serves both functions. That can be challenging, though, in many businesses. So we've definitely had the opportunity to field test both types of strategies.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun for us. Listen, so if you're interested in using video in your business to guarantee ROI, we just published a free video course featuring yours truly that teaches how we use video to guarantee and to generate ROI. And you can access it at wirebuzz.com/ROI. It is a free video course. So you could be super lazy, sit back, watch me entertain you while I teach you all the steps through the process. wirebuzz.com/ROI. All right, if this podcast was valuable to you and you want to be a part of the constant, consistent education that we provide, all you have to do is go to Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. You know, we're accessible on each one of those. Just hit the subscribe button, and Marcus will make sure that the latest episode gets sent directly to your mobile device. You'll do that, right, Marcus?
Personally?
and then while you're there, just do us a big favor. Leave a really honest rating and review. We're marketers that are interested and open to learning and perfecting our craft. And one of the ways that we become better is candid feedback from our audience. Please rate and review. Share this podcast with anybody you're rooting for. And then my biggest takeaway for you is if this is your first episode and you made it all the way to the end, God bless you. But keep in mind, we're building. And you're probably on, episode 71 now. So there's a lot of foundation that would be super valuable for you if you just rewound to the very beginning of this podcast series. Start at episode 1. I assure you, it'll give you a really solid foundation. And then when you get to episode 71 again, you'll now go, oh, wow, this is a lot of valuable information that moves the needle at my business and companies that I advise. If you just jump in episode 71, it's like, you know, watching season 6 of House of Cards and wait for the spoiler alert right here, and showing up in season 6 and all of a sudden trying to figure out why the Underwoods are at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. It doesn't make sense and isn't as valuable if it's out of context. Start at the beginning, work your way forward, make us part of your addiction to learning new information in your industry. If you want to get access to the show notes for this episode, episode 71, all you have to do is go to wirebuzz.com/71. Now, I'm going to give you a couple easy ways to remember 71. It's the number of different characters that can be used on the standard English keyboard, excluding, of course, uppercase letters. There's 71 of them. There's also U.S. Interstate 71, which runs through Kentucky and Ohio. Of course, you know that. And the U.S. nuclear Navy aircraft carrier, the USS Teddy Roosevelt, is, its call numbers are CVN-71. Easy way to find the show notes, wirebuzz.com/71. And Wirebuzz will continue to do our job of bringing you the latest and best information, including the latest news in video marketing, which will be released in the very next episode, 72. And we update you each and every week on all the information that you need to know in order to become a video marketing master.